Blog Talk Radio.
If it's the weekend, it's Wrestling Night America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Saturday evening for April 6, 2024. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and this is WrestleMania 40 Night 1 live post-show, Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchDailyCast.com. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. And if you're unfamiliar with our show, tuning in for the first time, first of all, welcome. Second of all, we are here each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, pwtorchdailycast.com, taking your phone calls and emails, so join us, won't you? And speaking of joining us, coming online right now is pwtorch.com contributor Brandon LeClaire. Brandon does the live alternative perspective PLE or pay-per-view reports at pwtorch.com, along with the editor Wade Keller, who does the reports in real time as well. So, Brandon, good to have you along with us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So for those who are listening, 515-605-9345 is the number to call if you'd like to chat with us and talk about what you thought of WrestleMania. If it's getting too late and you can only listen for a short time but want to get your voice heard, WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send those emails. The consensus, Brandon, seems to be that most of the card was really good on WrestleMania Night 1, but that the main event was, you know, pick your adjective, but not great. How did you see the main event in relation to the rest of the card from a quality standpoint?
I mean, I thought it was a very different match than the rest of the card for a number of reasons. Obviously, they went full bore on the spectacle aspect, and given that, you know, this involved The Rock and it was a bloodline match, you kind of knew going in that it was going to be heavy-handed on the emotional storytelling and the trash talk and the slow plodding brawl pace. And I thought that they delivered in spades in that regard. I mean, this was a long, sprawling match. I've heard that people thought that it went too long and was bloated in the middle. I just didn't feel that way at all. I mean, I was fully engrossed from start to finish. I thought that these were stars being stars, and I loved the interactions between the wrestlers. I liked the body language, the interplay, the way that The Rock fit into the whole thing, the way that he seemed fully committed to working, you know, a full modern style professional match. I mean, I just thought that this was a tremendous main event and something that felt like a WrestleMania main event on a card that to me was very good, but at times struggled to feel like it was a big deal. I mean, the venue looked incredible. And the atmosphere was good. The crowd did not seem to be mic'd well, or if they were particularly quiet throughout much of the show. And I know that is a problem with stadiums in general, especially outdoor stadiums for wrestling. It's been a complaint for WrestleMania for years. And I thought that this year it was a little bit more noticeable than usual. But I thought in terms of delivering a WrestleMania main event spectacle, this delivered in spades and really set them up for a huge moment tomorrow night. I mean, you kind of think about last year's show having that big, you know, exhale of crowd energy and celebration when Sammy and KO won the tag team titles, and then sort of the letdown and disappointment on night two that we were left with as the lasting image of WrestleMania. And this year it feels very much like they're aiming for the opposite of that effect. You got the foreboding negative result tonight where the odds are stacked against Cody Rhodes in every way imaginable. And they sold with that incredible look on Cody's face as they were going off the air. Michael Cole just pulling, you know, a ton of weight, doing an incredible job selling that, hey, Cody is screwed. You know, there's nothing he can do. Nobody can stop the bloodline. And, of course, it seems immensely obvious at this point that Cody is going to win tomorrow. And I think that that emotional swing is going to be really special.
I think the word spectacle that you use to describe the main event is accurate. Whether you liked the match or you didn't like the match, I think that was an accurate description. Now, I guess the difference is there are some people who like the spectacle, who've come to expect that from this level of main event match, especially with the stars involved. There are some people who don't enjoy that spectacle, right? The bloodline interference, the slow pace that Roman Reigns has wrestled many of his title defenses, the quote-unquote storytelling focus of those matches, the conversation, especially during the pandemic when there was no crowd, that seemed to make up at least half of the Roman Reigns match on any given night when it was that level of storytelling. So I think spectacle is the right word. And yeah, I don't think anyone's unhappy by the result here. I think most fans who paid close attention to what was going on kind of figured that Rock and Roman were going to win here and Cody would beat the odds. You know, Michael Cole laid it on very thick at the end of this show that Cody basically has no chance in hell tomorrow night, which is, you know, we just saw Sami Zayn overcome that against Gunther, those same odds earlier in the show. So I don't think anyone's upset at the result necessarily. It's just a different expectation for what the body of this match was going to be. And maybe those are unfair expectations given what Roman Reigns matches are like, given that Rock at his age is coming back for the first time in, what, 10 years in wrestling a match, given that Seth Rollins, Cody Rhodes, and Roman Reigns are all in very high-profile matches tomorrow night on night two of WrestleMania. And, you couldn't really expect them to go all out 100% here in this match, knowing that they needed to save even the sliver of themselves for tomorrow night. So when you take all of that into account and you look at the match through that lens, I think you can say, oh, yeah, how they laid it out made sense. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I thought that – and that's something that – part of the reason why I like this match as much as I did is because I think going in, it was fair to expect that the action would be – limited, or at the very least, it would be relatively rudimentary for all the reasons that you pointed out. I mean, that just tends to be the style that Roman Reigns works. The Rock hasn't had a match in 8 years, and you know, the last time we saw him, he was a limited worker as it stood. And Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins were obviously going to be tasked with carrying the majority of the movement in the match, and for them, they both have big singles matches tomorrow. So there was always going to be a bit of pacing here, not just because of who was involved, but because of the circumstances surrounding it. And I just thought that they did a really good job handling that and using those expectations to their advantage in what I think could have been a pretty big disaster. I mean, in terms of in-ring quality. And I thought that they pulled it off really well, and I thought that the atmosphere – you know, did a lot of the heavy lifting for them. Both, all four of these guys at this point are so incredibly over and have so much star power. I mean, you think Seth Rollins is probably the number four on the list here. And Seth is a guy who can very easily, you know, headline major shows and carry house shows and carry a brand on his own. So to talk about him as fourth in line on this is pretty crazy when you think about it. And so I think that they did as much as they needed to get by on star power alone, and they told a satisfying story with a conclusion that sets them up for that big moment tomorrow.
Well, if you're just tuning in, this is PW Torch Wrestling Night in America here for Saturday, April 6th, 2024. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, along with PWTorch.com contributor Brandon LeClaire. We want to hear from you about WrestleMania Night 1. You can call us up, 515-605-9345. We have a lot of people listening, but remember, you got to press 1 if you want to give us your thoughts on the show. Also, WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send any emails. We'll get to those a little later on, read your thoughts on the air. Brandon and I will discuss them, et cetera, et cetera. So before we get to the phones, Brandon, let's go through the show. We won't expend a lot of energy on these matches. We'll see what the callers want to talk about, and if we have time at the end, we'll get to some of the matches we didn't talk about. By the way, NXT Stand and Deliver happened earlier today as well. So if you want to talk about anything that happened on that show, you're more than welcome to call up and chat with us about that. Although at this point at 11:34 Eastern at night, that show feels like it happened a week ago, Brandon. But yes, it did happen earlier today. So if you want to call and talk about that, you're more than welcome to. WrestleMania Night 1 began with Rhea Ripley defeating Becky Lynch to retain the Women's World title. Grayson Waller and Austin Theory won the SmackDown Tag Team titles, and R-Truth and The Miz won the Raw Tag Team titles in the six-team tag team ladder match. Yes, the belts were hung separately, so separate teams won them, so no longer are they unified and being held by the same team. Rey Mysterio and Andrade defeated Dominic Mysterio and Santos Escobar with a little help from their luchador friends, Jason Kelsey and Lane Johnson of the Philadelphia Eagles. Jey Uso defeated Jimmy Uso. Jade Cargill, Naomi, and Bianca Belair defeated Damage Control. Sami Zayn is your new Intercontinental Champion, upending Gunther and ending his historic title reign. And then finally, the main event, Rock and Roman Reigns defeated Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins when, by the way, Rock pinned Cody Rhodes. So before we get to the phones, Brandon, I want to ask you about that specifically from the main event. Rock pinning Cody Rhodes, did that finish? Even if you expected Rock and Reigns to win, there were several permutations about how to get there. Did it surprise you that Rock was the one that pinned Cody? Rock gets the victory, Cody takes the pinfall?
Not really. I mean, I think that the obvious fall guy would probably have been Seth Rollins, given, as I mentioned before, if you just look at the star power of the four guys in this match, he's probably fourth in line, which more than being a knock on Seth just says a lot about the other three. But Seth, I think Seth is primed for a loss tomorrow night against Drew McIntyre. And if that's the case, I think it would be a bit of a bummer to have him eat two falls on back-to-back nights. I think that stacking the odds further against Cody here is the right move, ultimately. I don't think that any harm is done by having someone of the stature of The Rock pinning Cody when, we know, or we presume to know what's coming tomorrow. I mean, if WrestleMania goes off the air tomorrow and Roman Reigns is somehow still champion and Cody Rhodes is, left laying again, then we can have a different conversation. But I think for the purposes of tonight and where I think they're going tomorrow, it was a fine move.
If that happens, we might be fielding phone calls until the sun comes up tomorrow morning from angry viewers of WrestleMania. So let's not wish that upon ourselves.
Right through the eclipse on Monday.
That's true. Hey, we won't be tempted to have to look at the sun, I guess, then. It'll keep us inside. All right, we'll go to the phones. Starting us off tonight here, WrestleMania Night 1 post-show is DJ from Miami. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What did you think of WrestleMania Night 1?
It was pretty okay. It wasn't too bad. My first thing is the Ripley thing. Once again, she came out. How they talked about her, how she strutted. They keep on saying she was wearing white, baby face. I feel like this is kind of crazy how much they're really pushing her as a baby face, but she's not really a baby face. Like, I feel like, it's crazy is that, the man was more of a heel than Ripley. I don't know what is going on, but do you think they will hopefully do something maybe after the draft or the pusher, or what do you think at the end of the day? Because Jane looks like she's, going to do her thing too, but it looks like this girl might be a real babyface at the end of the day. Because maybe, I don't know if Charlotte's going to come back Monday or what.
So, Brandon, one of the most interesting parts of WrestleMania that didn't really have to do with the storylines or the potential results or anything was the reaction that Rhea Ripley would get vis-a-vis Becky Lynch in the Women's World title match. Ripley seemed to have a lot of babyface momentum behind her, even though she's a heel. Becky Lynch, still beloved by fans, but it definitely feels like she's not the hot new thing anymore that fans want to get behind. So I was wondering, in a battle of Ripley and Lynch, to at least to the fans, babyface wrestlers, would Ripley get cheered more? Would that lead to boos for Becky Lynch? And I didn't sense that tonight. It seemed like, and it's hard with these stadium shows because the sound goes straight up and you don't get the kind of visceral reaction as a television viewer that you would get if this was in an arena. But it certainly seemed like both women were cheered throughout the match. So Ripley as a babyface seems like, even 3-4 months ago, seemed like the eventual play. I just don't know whether that's Monday night on Raw or whether that's 2 months down the line. Brandon, what do you think of the reaction these women got, and what's the status of Rhea Ripley as a future babyface?
Yeah, kind of a unfortunate confluence of circumstances going into this match, where you have someone who's on the rise as a babyface star in Rhea Ripley, and another who's kind of on the decline. And I don't mean that as a knock to Becky, just that, you know, she's still obviously a very popular star and beloved figure within the roster, but she's no longer that main event company leading draw that I think she was for a brief period of time. And that, I don't think that's really her fault. I think that, you know, she still has had a really hard time recovering from that ill-advised heel turn when she initially came back from her pregnancy. And they've really struggled to get her back to a point where she feels like that big babyface star again. And so, as good of a job as I think they did in the last few weeks at trying to heat this feud up and really paint it as, you know, the current megastar versus both of them being current megastars, but Rhea almost needing to prove herself against Becky to really cement herself as that top dominant champion. I thought that they did a good job, but still, because of the lack of fire that really has been missing from the crowd when it comes to Becky Lynch, I thought they fell, you know, just a gear short. And so going into tonight, I sort of expected what we got, which is that the crowd was not inherently against Becky Lynch. They still like her. They still, you know, enjoy her work, enjoy her character. They want to root for her. They simply want to root for Rhea Ripley more because she is the hot new thing. And I think that's what we got. And I think it prevented the match in some ways from really, you know, moving into fourth gear. I really liked the match overall, but thought that it could have been better if there was just a more clearly defined role between the two, where, you know, they didn't even have Rhea necessarily work heel. I mean, she was technically the heel in the match, but more or less worked, you know, down the middle, and Becky obviously worked as the babyface. It's going to be hard if they continue down this path of having Rhea in the Judgment Day, where the majority of that group is booed very heavily. I mean, you look at Dom, for example, and then you have Rhea, who's getting universally cheered. I would think that the split is coming sooner rather than later, especially now that, you know, Dom has failed to recruit Andrade and Priest and Balor have lost the tag titles. It just seems like that split is coming. And at that point, I think it'll be time to firmly, you know, just establish Rhea as a full-time babyface. It sets Becky up for what I think could be an interesting journey in the next couple of months, but we also don't know if Becky's going to be around. I mean, she has not signed a new contract, so far as we know.
And she was pretty mum on the Ariel Helwani show when asked about, you know, the future of her deal. She more or less hinted at the idea that she's a WWE lifer, but not necessarily that she was, you know, assuredly going to be returning right away.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I certainly don't think Becky is going to not re-sign with WWE and then go to AEW. You know, I think that
right. If
anything,
she
may, yeah, I think the play would be take some time off. You know, she's got a young child at home that she may want to spend more time with than as opposed to being on the road. And maybe, you know, down the line in a year or two, come back. You know, we'll see. We'll see how that shakes out. DJ, back to you for your second question for us.
Second thing is the same thing. I just, God, of all people, like Sami Zayn, like he held this title so high and mighty, and I just thought, you know, Breaker or somebody who wouldn't be, I feel like, a tag team guy, you know. I don't know. I just, at the end of the day, he cannot hold that title how the title's been holding highly, and, you know, it's been doing good, and the Ray's been doing good for that title. And I feel like somebody like him cannot hold that title as much as Gunther or, you know, Breaker or somebody like that, because that title's been doing really great compared to, you know, the tag team champion has been crap. You know what I'm saying?
I think the story leading into this match, I think if you had told me, you know, a couple months ago, Sami Zayn's going to beat Gunther for the Intercontinental title, I might have said, I could probably think of a couple others that I might prefer to see over Sami Zayn win the title. But I thought they really played the story well leading up into this match with the doubt and Sami Zayn not knowing if he was even going to make the WrestleMania card. You know, think back to those conversations that he had while in the stands, you know, reflecting upon where he is in the WWE hierarchy and, you know, the doubt that Chad Gable planted in his head, all of that and to lead up to him getting the victory, I thought made it special. And, you know, moving forward, who knows what his Intercontinental title reign is going to look like. But I thought the story of the match really helped solidify Sami as the guy who should win it. I know there's arguments that Gunther should have won, and maybe he could have lost at some point to somebody, you know, that DJ suggested. But I thought it was, you know, arguably the match of the night here tonight on night one. And in fact, and maybe they did get, I don't have Peacock Premium, so I got a lot of commercials where you would see video packages and other things. But I was kind of disappointed we didn't see some kind of celebration with Sami Zayn, maybe even just as the camera followed him from the back to, you know, through Gorilla and through the curtain, that maybe they would follow him back and, you know, see him embrace Kevin Owens again and embrace Chad Gable and embrace his son. You know, I thought that would have been a nice touch as opposed to having 30 minutes for entrances of the main event, maybe. I don't know. Brandon, what were your thoughts on Sami Zayn being the one to break Gunther's streak, the storyline leading up to it? And would you have preferred someone like a Bron Breakker or, you know, someone else, take your pick on the roster of beating Gunther here?
Yeah, I mean, you can make a case all day long for a bunch of other names, and I don't necessarily know that I disagree with many of them. I think that we've gotten in the habit of, because Roman Reigns' title reign has been built as this thing, this insurmountable thing that needs to have the right guy end it. It needs to have the right guy, you know, coronated as the next guy to take the title from Roman, because the reign has been so impressive. I think that people have kind of gotten in the habit of doing the same thing with Gunther. And I understand why, and I don't disagree fully. But I also just think that Sami Zayn has been a stalwart for this company, one of the most important pieces and figureheads they've had in the last few years. This is now the third WrestleMania in a row where he's stolen the show on the night that he wrestled. Just had just incredible outings, and you know, a generational run, a generational seller, a generational talent. And he's a multi-time Intercontinental Champion, so I get that, you know, there could be some disappointment there that it's not putting a new guy over. But I think we have to take a look at the situation that the title is in. The last time Sammy held that title, it wasn't worth nearly what it was now. Sammy wasn't nearly as well protected as he is now. And a different guy was running the company who didn't care so much for the mid-card titles. So I am less inclined to think that it had to be some super special moment where somebody like Bron Breakker, an up-and-coming guy, comes and takes that title off of Gunther. And instead, I think the right time to do it is one, when you're priming Gunther to move up the card. I think that we should be less concerned with who Gunther loses the title to, so long as it's someone who's worthy of holding that title, which Sami Zayn certainly is, and more concerned about when was the right time for Gunther to lose it because he needs to move up the card to start challenging for world titles. And I think that's the move here. I think Gunther is going to be positioned to be in the world title picture following WrestleMania. So to me, this is all positive. I mean, you get Gunther to move up the card into a world title position, and the guy who beats him for the title is one of the most beloved babyfaces in the company, fighting from underneath, somebody who has a tailor-made feud, you know, built in with Chad Gable, if they want to set that up coming out of this show, and then who can just work incredible matches with a variety of wrestlers in the coming weeks and months. So I think they did a really, really good job positioning Sammy here, setting him up for a big underdog victory. And I thought the match itself was just executed incredibly well. They told an excellent story. I thought Gunther was incredible with his facial expressions, the way that he kept turning to Sammy's wife and, you know, challenging her, asking her to throw in the towel for Sammy. And that moment, you know, the crowd was kind of split midway through there. They were going back and forth with dueling chants. But that moment where Sammy finally fired up after taking splash after splash and just started pounding the mat, they just got behind him fully. And it felt like that, reliving that moment that they had in the tag match last year. And I just thought it was really, really good.
All right, DJ, back to you for your third and final question for us tonight.
My last question is the last match. It was, like, so too long. You know, they did too much stuff. I feel like they could have did a lot of different endings. I feel like, I don't know why, I feel like Drew McIntyre should have just threw Seth in the ring, and then maybe Seth Punk came out. I don't know. Something, like, small like that could pop here and there. I don't know. I feel like it was too long, but at the end of the day, I feel like Cody's going to win, of course, you know. But I feel like the more money on the table is The Rock versus Cody. And that's what people want to see. Do you think compared to him winning the championship now? Or do you feel like after this, doesn't look like The Rock is really down to do something at SummerSlam with Cody, or do you definitely think it's definitely going to be Roman? And do you think that's what the people want? Because, you know, before, people wanted just, you know, him and Roman. But now it looks like they just maybe just want The Rock and Cody. And my second part is, like, they also said a lot of cuss words, and they never bleeped one out at all. Do you think now that they're showing that? I mean, 100% I heard a lot, like at least five or more, but do you think on Netflix they'll cut that out, or what's going on with that?
Yeah, as for your last question, I don't think that's going to be just a complete change in WWE philosophy. I think, you know, in this special occasion, as we see a lot of times in the build-up to WrestleMania, wrestlers get a lot more leeway to do things, whether that's curse, whether that's bleed, whether that, you know, whatever the case may be, they do have a lot more leeway. And certainly The Rock is going to be allowed even more leeway than most because of his position on the board, because of who he is. He's The Rock. Even if he was not on the TKO board, he's The Rock. So he's going to get a little bit more leeway. The not bleeping it is interesting because they could easily do that. I thought they tried to bleep one of them when he was at ringside, scolding the referee for counting to 10, and they were just really late on the bleep. So I'm not sure what they're able to play and what they're not, but I don't think this is going to be a complete sea change when they go to Netflix. Brandon, one of the discussions coming into this show was what The Rock might have lined up coming out of it. And there was speculation on Rock versus Cody Rhodes at some point, especially with the way the buildup has been shaped. You know, it's been shaped mostly around Rock and Cody Rhodes. And then there was still the idea of Rock and Roman Reigns at some point. Initially, it was Roman as heel, Rock as babyface, but as the storyline progressed, people kind of looked at the other way with Rock as a heel, Roman as a babyface. And then we have the spot where Roman accidentally spears The Rock during the match. And we have the finish where The Rock pins Cody Rhodes. So we've kind of gotten those two ideas confirmed in this match that WWE may be thinking about those two matches down the line as well, given they were both teased in a way in this match. What do you think is more likely, or maybe what do you think we get first, Rock versus Reigns or Rock versus Rhodes? And where do you see that kind of fitting in the 2024 or 2025 WWE timeline?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really depends on what The Rock is up for. I mean, if you're going by his performance tonight, you know, I thought he looked good. Obviously, there's a lot to be said about working a tag match. He gets a significant amount of rest in between major spots. But I thought that, you know, he carried himself well. He obviously looked the part. The crowd was obviously still fully invested into what he was doing. There's definitely money to be made in Rock and Cody, for sure. I think that is probably, if you ask a lot of fans what they're looking forward to most at this point, And they certainly tease the dissension tonight. I think that they're probably keeping their options open, because if WWE is tasked with booking The Rock in one more match, if they've only got one more match out of him and Rock thinks that's all they can give him, then I think they have to do the Roman Reigns match. I mean, people have been talking about it for years. They've certainly, you know, they've hinted they've wanted to do it. That was the plan last year. It was considered and tossed around this year. So I think that one has to happen. And I think it's almost assured that we get it at some point. But if Rock says, yeah, I've got two in me, then obviously you want to go down the path of Cody Rhodes. And I mean, if I'm just booking it out, if I'm fantasy booking, I'm thinking, you know, Cody Rock at SummerSlam and Roman Rock at next year's WrestleMania. That would be my preference.
Interesting. Yeah, it does feel like, I mean, getting three Rock matches in a calendar year seems a bit ambitious with his schedule. So, you know, planting seeds this year to pay off at next year's WrestleMania, that seems more likely to me than fitting both of those matches in 2024. But we will see. Thank you for – yep. Let me
I'm just gonna
say goodbye to DJ, then I'll pick you back up.
Sure.
DJ, thanks for the phone call this week.
I got one more request. Can you go through the Hall of Fame? Because I didn't see everybody who went in.
Go through the whole thing of what?
The Hall of Fame, just I didn't know who went in. Could you go through that later or whatever when you get that time?
Sure. I'll pull that up. Brandon, go ahead and give your point, and then I'll go through the Hall of Fame here in a minute.
Yeah, so I was just going to mention that I believe someone had gone through. Rock does have commitments for the majority of spring and summer that I think is going to keep him out of any involvement in, like, the Saudi show, for example. I know that there were people talking about the idea that maybe he'd be involved in that just because of the financial aspect, but it seems like he's off the table for that. But he does become available around the time they would start the build for SummerSlam. And so I think there was some thought that maybe he could show up there.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's all about trying to read his schedule and figure out. I mean, you got to remember, too, it's not just openings in his schedule. It's openings in his schedule enough to where he can train. You know, he went through a pretty serious training session for this, and this is just a tag match. So, if he's going to have a one-on-one match that's going to be the main draw of one of these shows, I mean, he's going to need to train even harder, even more, you would imagine. And so he's got to have the time to train in addition to just having the match itself. So that's something to consider as well when looking at those holes in his schedule. All right, for DJ, we have the Hall of Fame this year. Paul Heyman was inducted by Roman Reigns. Bull Nakano, inducted by Alundra Blaze. Thunderbolt Patterson, inducted by The New Day. Liam Maivia, inducted by The Rock. The U.S. Express, Mike Rotunda and Barry Windham, inducted by Bo Dallas and Mika Rotunda. And Muhammad Ali in the Celebrity Wing, inducted by The Undertaker. Brandon, did you happen to watch the Hall of Fame induction ceremony Friday night after SmackDown?
I saw bits and pieces of it, namely Paul Heyman's acceptance speech, and then bits of what The Rock did, and then a little bit of just a couple of the other segments here and there. But it was a strange night. The Hall of Fame is an odd event these days.
You know, I think the last one that I watched, I remember getting to Mark Henry's induction speech back in 2018, and I didn't get through the rest of the show. Like, and it wasn't because I didn't want to or anything like that. It's just, you know, there's so much wrestling on. My God, you know, it's hard to take the time even required for that. But then I just kind of lost track of it. And then when they started doing it after SmackDown, it was like, this just isn't the same. You know, it didn't have that feel that the Hall of Fame had when it was done as its own entity. And so I haven't watched it since. So, that was the Hall of Fame Friday night. Let's go to our next call. This is Boris from Chicago checking in. Boris only comes out for the big shows. WrestleMania is certainly a big show. Boris, what did you think of night one of WrestleMania tonight? Come on, Boris. Hello? Boris? Boris isn't there. I don't hear snoring, which is a good sign. We'll come back to Boris. There is plenty of room on the switchboard. If you want to call in, 515-605-9345, make sure to press 1 to chat with us. We will we just had someone pop up the 409 area code, 409. Welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name, where you're calling from.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Freddie P, living in L.A. now.
Hey, what's going on? Good to hear from you again, Freddie. What do you think of WrestleMania Night 1 tonight?
Hello, can you hear me?
We got you.
Okay, I actually thought it was a really nice show. I will say that I thought that maybe it would be, you know, with 7 matches, that it wouldn't be 4 hours plus. But still, though, I really enjoyed it. And my first thing would be, what's your guys' opinion on the commentary? I don't know if this is the first time that the three of them are together, Pat McAfee, Cole, and Graves, but I kind of felt like during the show, they were stepping on each other, and sometimes, you know, particularly McAfee, sometimes he tends to talk just a little bit too much over the action. So maybe it's the first night together, and they're still like figuring things out, but just as a whole, what did you guys think of the commentary about the trio doing WrestleMania? That's my first question.
I thought Michael Cole was really good. I think, you know, it's a tough ask for Corey Graves because he's now the lead commentator on SmackDown. And, you know, that's a very different role in a lot of ways than color commentary. So, and he's been improving in that area on SmackDown. And here they call him in to go back to color commentary. So, it's kind of like exercising different muscles, I think, in a way. And so, you know, I give Graves a lot of credit for coming in and, you know, performing as well as he did tonight. 3 hours is a lot for Pat McAfee. And I enjoyed his first run on SmackDown for the most part. I don't think he's reached that level, the second run. And tonight, again, 3 hours is a lot of Pat McAfee to hear on commentary. I'll stop right there. Brandon, what did you think of commentary tonight?
Yeah, I echo a lot of what you said. I think that Cole was excellent. I mean, he has really blossomed into a really, really good commentator and a good storyteller in the post Vince McMahon WWE. I mean, with the freedom that he's had to speak the way that he wants to and deliver things the way that he wants to, I just think that he's done a really remarkable job selling the big moments. And to me tonight, that was really on full display in the main event, where he just really carried things from beat to beat and sold the seriousness and the viciousness of Rock's, the way the Rock was behaving toward Chad Patton in particular. And he really helped tell that story when, you know, it might, even little things that the fans might not have picked up on, Cole was sure to point out, like him turning to Cody and apologizing, for example. So, yeah, I mean, big, big thumbs up for Michael Cole. Corey Graves, I mean, always works well with Cole in that position, but I agree. He is being asked to do a lot, given that when he works with Cole, he's quite clearly the heel color guy. But on SmackDown, with Wade Barrett in that position, the heel color guy, Corey is forced to play it more straight as the play-by-play sort of neutral babyface type. And so when you ask him to just sort of turn that switch off and go back to his role as heel color guy, you can have some issues. And then add Pat McAfee into the mix, and yeah, Corey and Pat were definitely talking over each other at times, and even sort of, it seemed like they were getting frustrated with each other off and on. Pat, to me, was a huge net positive during his first run. I thought he brought so much to the table during that initial run with Michael Cole. He brought the best out of Michael Cole. It was clear that Michael was having a great time with him. You could tell that they had a bunch of natural chemistry. And you could also tell that Pat was really invested and knowledgeable about the product. Since his return, I haven't felt the same way. And it feels like Pat is scraping by with less knowledge than he had before and doing so because he knows he can get away with it and he knows that he can lean on Michael Cole to fill in the gaps. He's been more gimmicky in the way that he calls things and introducing more shorthand that I don't necessarily always think makes a ton of sense. It's stuff that he uses on his podcast, which is fine in that context, but doesn't really work when he's at a commentary booth. And I mean, sometimes he just says things that are so out of left field that Cole and Graves are forced to stop and correct him or retort because he's just coming out of there with something ridiculous that makes no sense. So he had his moments tonight. I mean, I don't think he was a nuisance the way that he has sometimes been on Raw in recent weeks. I think the Patastrator is awful, and I wish they would stop doing it, but I don't think that they will. Before we get too far removed from commentary, though, I did want to point out that I don't know if anyone else caught this, but when after the bell rang for the main event, Pat just straight up said that Roman Reigns is battling leukemia right now.
Yeah, and yeah, that was wild.
Neither Corey or Michael jumped in to correct him. So I was thinking, like, did Pat just spill the beans on something that we're not supposed to know?
When they were on the I just came across this because I'm scrolling through X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it right now, and there was a question about that in the post-show presser, and Roman did say that he's on an oral chemotherapy to manage his leukemia and will be for the rest of his life. He's still in remission. So
okay.
I guess, you know, that battle is going to be ongoing for the rest of his life because he's taking medication to handle it. So, you know, maybe that's what Pat McAfee was referring to. So I don't know. But,
right. So,
so
no
yeah.
official diagnosis changed since he was last declared in remission is what it sounds like. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. So to go back to the point about Corey Graves, though, and having to go back and forth sort of between commentary jobs. When I was in college, I was on the radio doing games for our men's and women's basketball team on our college radio station. And the way it worked was my partner and I had tried out for the men's basketball announcing role. And what happened was nobody tried out for the women's role. So they said, look, you got the men's role, but you're also going to have to do the women. And so the way it worked was I was play-by-play for the men's, and my partner was color commentary for the men's. And they played the same day. So, I mean, it was like the men's play for the women play first, the men play second. So, and then I would do color commentary for the women, and my partner would do play-by-play for the women. So there was always like, and you get used to it as the year goes on, but there was always that little bit of adjustment when you went from one to the other, like so quickly,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, and so I can see how Graves, you know, settling into this role on commentary that he's now in and then being asked to go back to this other role can be a bit, it takes a little bit to feel comfortable in that again. Freddie, we'll go back to you. Second question or comment for us about WrestleMania tonight.
And when McAfee said it, I got the point that I think he was trying to make, which is, you know, sort of Roman is ready for the moment. He's, you know, he's overcome all odds. But it was just it was sort of strange to me that he brought that up, you know, because, I mean, I guess it's, I don't know, you know, obviously, you know, they want to paint them as superheroes and, things of that sort. And so just to bring up the leukemia thing, just to me, just seemed really out of place. So that kind of caught me too. And no one else commented on it afterwards as well, which made it even more awkward. So I caught that too. But yeah, no, you're right, Greg. He did. I was watching a little bit of the press conference. He did say that he's in remission and that's something they don't have to deal with. But speaking of Roman Reigns, I guess today he tied the record with Hulk Hogan for having the most main events at WrestleMania, I believe. And I think tomorrow he breaks that record. Obviously, there's a lot of talk with the documentary about Roman Reigns being the GOAT and, you know, and things of that sort. Outside of, you know, the WWE, obviously, you know, hype of marketing Roman Reigns as the GOAT, how do you guys actually view his run as a top guy up to this point? This is my second question.
You know, I think he deserves a lot of credit for WWE's turnaround. Because you got to remember, there was a time when AEW was coming very close to WWE's ratings, that they were even beating WWE in terms of attendance in some markets when they'd run close together. And WWE has turned it around in, I think, great part. You know, there's always a lot of factors. There's never just one reason for a downturn in business or an upturn in business. But I do think Roman Reigns gets a lot of credit because he has been the top star during that time when WWE has gone from, kind of the same old feel to, hey, this is something interesting. They're doing something really different with this. And I think it's Roman Reigns as the top star, but it's also the Bloodline storyline that he is the main part of. And the Bloodline storyline is a storyline unlike any we've really ever seen in professional wrestling, just in terms of the length, in terms of the amount of time that story has spent as the top story in the company. So I think he gets a lot of credit, and I think history is going to look very kindly on Roman Reigns when, you know, Brandon, you got to remember, there's a time, I've been doing this show a long time, and before that I was, you know, doing the Thursday live cast with James Caldwell. I mean, there was a time when Roman Reigns was just not it. It just, it felt, you know, the suffering succotash, and it was like, is this guy ever going to get over to the level that WWE and Vince McMahon see him as? And there were some real doubts about that. People looked at Seth Rollins and thought he was going to be the bigger star, even Dean Ambrose. And I think, you know, eventually WWE brass were proven correct that Roman Reigns could be the top star and supplant, I mean, not supplant, but take John Cena's mantle as the leader of WWE from an in-ring standpoint. But on the other hand, the fans were also right who were clamoring for Reigns to turn heel in order to get him to that point, and that's really what it took. It took a heel turn for him to realize that potential that was seen in him from a very early stage. So go to, you know, that discussion, I don't know. I'm not really into labels in that way, but I do think Roman Reigns, if you want to talk about just where WWE is from a business standpoint right now versus where they were when this storyline began, I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. Brandon, what's your take?
It's a really fascinating discussion. And I think that you look back, for example, to the way that we as analysts and a lot of fans, how really everyone talks about John Cena now. Now that, you know, the vast, vast majority of his career can be looked at in hindsight. And Cena is looked at as one of the greatest of all time within, you know, the confines of WWE, and for good reason. You know, he was on top of the company for many, many years, but by and large, he oversaw a massive downturn in business and a really poor time in terms of ratings, attendance, general acceptance among the general public. I mean, wrestling was at a pretty low point through much of John Cena's run on top. And I think it was a testament to the professionalism he showed, the charisma that he had, that he was able to, you know, carry the company through a very dark time period coming out of the Chris Benoit stuff and all of that, and come out as a major star on the other side. And so if you're going to give Cena credit for what he did during a time period that is largely not viewed, not looked back on with much reverence, I think it's only fair to give Roman Reigns ample credit for leading the company, you know, through a pandemic, for one. I mean, Reigns was not around for the early part of that stretch, but came back pretty early on and debuted this tribal chief character that we see now, and really turned television around at the time, and did so as a heel, which WWE has been in an interesting point, interesting place for the last several years, in that until Cody Rhodes came around and really was established as the top babyface, they didn't really have a true lead company carrying babyface. Instead, the company was carried by Roman Reigns and the Bloodline story. And it was more about the interplay between Roman and his cousins and Solo Sikoa and Paul Heyman and all these figures than it was about the wrestling or really anything else. And so much of why that angle was as successful as it was and led to such a turnaround in business was because of how invested Roman Reigns was and how believable he was. Now, fast forward to 2024 as we presumably come to the end of his reign tomorrow. And, you know, there has been a lot of negativity surrounding a lot of Roman's in-ring work the last year and a half or so. People think a lot of his main event matches are the same. They're slow. They're plodding. You know, he doesn't do all that much anymore. And I get that criticism. And the Bloodline angle has worn thin with me too. And I'm someone who, you know, was just fully enamored with what they were doing for a very long period of time. But with that being said, you know, Roman worked himself to a point of being able to wrestle this very slow and safe style. I mean, when Reigns was trying to get over as a babyface unsuccessfully, he was killing himself out there. I mean, Reigns was going as hard as anyone else was in the ring. It just wasn't working because the crowd was adamant that he needed to be a heel. And, of course, they were eventually very much proven right. But I'm with you, Greg. I think history will be kind to Reigns. I don't know, you know, where he stacks up on the list of all-time greats because his story is unique in that the best that we've seen of Roman Reigns and the most memorable work we've seen of Roman Reigns is him being a mega heel. And very rarely do you see the mega heels put atop the mountain, unless you're talking about someone like Ric Flair, who, despite being a heel, was still revered for most of his career.
And it's also tough because we're still, in some ways, in the middle of Roman Reigns' mm-hmm. run on top, and it hasn't happened yet. Who knows? It could absolutely crater, and that could change the discussion and things like that. But it does make it a little difficult when you're sort of projecting out what the rest of his run or the rest of the storyline could look like and could do for business. All right, Freddie, we'll go back to you for your final question or comment for us, if you've got one tonight.
Yeah, just a couple quick side notes. My top two moments that I can't get out of my mind from tonight was that freaking jump from the apron from Joaquin Wilde. Seemed like it was 100 feet. That was crazy, insane, highlight reel type thing. And when Roman accidentally speared The Rock's reaction, that was so money, which I'm sure they'll be able to use that at some point. My last question is basically what's next for two different acts, and then I'll just list them. The first act being obviously, what's next for Carmelo Hayes? I'm going to say spoiler alert. I'll just ask, what do you guys think next for Carmelo Hayes? And then I was really fascinated by the dynamics between Naomi, Bianca, and Jay Cargo. I thought they really put on, a really good match. But then afterwards, it just seemed like they had so much of chemistry together. And so I'm wondering, what do you guys think is next for them as well? Thanks so much. Take my call.
All right, thanks, Freddie. So Carmelo Hayes lost the main event of Stand and Deliver to Trick Williams. I would say permanent main roster slot for Carmelo Hayes. I don't really know what his upward mobility looks like in WWE. I don't think he gets to the same level in WWE main roster that he got in NXT, where he was kind of, at least for a time, the star that NXT was built around. I think he was exposed in some ways in this match against Trick Williams, where Trick just, I mean, his personality pops off the screen to you in a way that I don't think Carmelo's does. And when you have them one-on-one in a match like this, it really was even more noticeable than usual. What did you think, if you had a chance to see NXT this afternoon, Brandon, what did you think of Trick and Melo, and what's next for Carmelo Hayes?
Yeah, I did see Stand and Deliver and thought the show was fine. But my interest in NXT was not, I would say, not increased by watching the show. Like, it was a fine way to spend the afternoon, and I'm glad I watched it, but it's still a product that doesn't quite check the boxes that I'm looking for. I'm a fan of Carmelo Hayes, and I'm a fan of Trick Williams. I used to see Carmelo Hayes back, you know, the Christian Casanova days, in various independents in up here in Maine. I think that, Hayes has already been on the main roster for a brief stint. And I, in a way, I wish they wouldn't have done that, because I think it sort of ruins the debut. I mean, same deal with Bron Breakker, where they kind of tease the idea of calling him up but haven't quite done it. I think that sort of sets him behind the eight ball a little bit. I do expect that he'll be called up here following WrestleMania. It seems like a very logical post-Mania call-up. I would expect that, you know, he'll retain the heel character for the time being. He strikes me as somebody who could slot in pretty easily in that upper mid-card slot on either Raw or SmackDown. To me, he'd be a really interesting opponent for Sami Zayn coming out of the gate if they don't go to Chad Gable right away. But, yeah, I mean, I think time will tell whether he is someone who can rise above that mid to upper mid-card level. I think largely it's going to depend on his connection with the crowd because he's a guy who, Greg, I think you kind of hit it on the head where he comes off like a star, he's presented like a star, he looks like a star, but then he sort of was out-starred today by Trick Williams. So, you know, it doesn't mean that it's always going to be like that in every situation that he's in, but it does show you that there are other guys in NXT waiting in the wings that can probably usurp him on the main roster. So I'm definitely interested to see how the crowds take to him on the main roster, and I think that will dictate, you know, in a couple months where I think his ultimate landing spot is on the card.
I thought Naomi, Jade Cargill, and Bianca Belair might have had the best entrance of the evening tonight. I thought that was cool. Really well done. The match was laid out pretty much like you would expect, with Bianca and Naomi doing the bulk of the wrestling. The hot tag was made to Jade Cargill. She got the pinfall in the end. Sort of just a taste of what Jade can do. They didn't ask her to do too much in this setting. It's hard to say what's next because we haven't seen the SmackDown Women's title match, which will take place tomorrow night. But, you know, I think it's probably, at least for Bianca and Naomi, more of the same. Maybe they do Bianca and Naomi for the tag titles or some combination of these three perhaps going after the tag titles. You know, that could be a way they could protect Jade at first if they want to do that. But I mean, Jade is going to be a huge star. Bianca should be, I think, a bigger star than the way she's been portrayed lately in WWE. So I think if you're looking at a pecking order, it's kind of Bianca, then below her is Naomi. And then Jade is, you know, again, it really depends for Jade how much WWE is willing to trust her in the ring in big moments. They didn't seem to have a lot of trust in her in big moments here tonight. She didn't do a ton. So I'm kind of interested to see what that means for her. Does she wrestle squash matches for a while like she did in AEW, where she got really overdoing that? You know, do they take a page out of that book, or do they do something completely different? So, you know, Bianca is Bianca, Naomi is Naomi. I don't think their station is going to change in WWE anytime soon, but Jade is the one with more pliability in terms of where she may end up, and a lot of it depends on WWE's confidence in her in-ring work.
Yeah, I mean, I think you saw tonight the way that the company views each of those three women based on their involvement in the match and the way that they entered. Naomi was the first to step off the podium. Jade, you know, as sort of the undercard. Jade was second as the up-and-comer, the unknown, and Bianca was last as the established main event level star, and the three walked to the ring to Bianca's music. And that, to me, made a lot of sense. And then in the match itself, you kind of saw a similar situation play out. Naomi started off the match as sort of the opening flair, the opening taste. She tagged in Bianca, who worked the bulk of the thing, and hit all her big moves. And then they teased you with the up-and-comer, the unknown Jade, to finish things off. And you know, got her in there to hit a few moves and not do much else. But they built the anticipation with the crowd. She looked good in the few moves that she had, and you know, they did exactly what they needed to do to get that match over to the extent that they wanted it to be. I think that going forward, yeah, Bianca and Naomi are pretty much firmly rooted where they are. And the thing is that, you know, Bianca is sort of the fully polished version of Jade Cargill. Not to say that they're the same wrestler, but just to, you know, in the aspect that they are both sort of the the power wrestler. They're going to wow you with the power moves and the incredible strength. And Bianca sort of has that package. She has that package down, and Jade is sort of piecing it together. And I don't know if Jade ends up being a bigger star than Belair. I think she has the potential to be, but I think that, you know, they're going to have to feel things out for a bit with her and see what they have, where unlike AEW, at some point, if Jade is going to be a main event level star, there's going to be an expectation that she works longer matches, unless they just start treating her like, you know, the Brock Lesnar of the women's division. So that's going to be an interesting transition for her, where she's been used to, you know, in tags, she can tag in, do a few moves, get out. In singles or squash matches, she can hit her moves and get out. But if she's going to have a main event run, she's going to have to learn how to work that longer WWE style. And so far, we haven't seen any examples of her being able to do that or not being able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's try Boris one more time, see if he's there. Boris, are you there with us? Hello, Boris. I got nothing from Boris. All right. So let's run down the card then. Actually, we got an email. Let's get to the email first. This is from John. He says, "Hi, Greg and Brandon. Hope you're both doing well. First of all, I hope Samantha Irvin is taking care of her voice tonight because she was on top of her game. And I hope her vocal cords are doing well tonight. She had so much emotion and passion in her voice. This was a fantastic WrestleMania that I felt had some excellent highs and there weren't really any lows. The Becky Lynch-Rhea Ripley match was great, but I felt like it didn't reach the stratosphere like Rhea Charlotte last year or Becky Bianca from a few years ago. It was a great story, great performances, but I felt like they could have reached a new gear, but I suspect Becky's illness may have had to do with, along with some other more minor issues. I also suspect they will have a better match in the near future that reaches a crescendo. Sami Zayn versus Gunther was absolutely amazing from start to finish. The storytelling, the emotion, the work in the ring, even before the match with the interactions between Zayn and his wife and kid and Chad Gable saying Zayn owes him a favor. It was the match of the night for me, and I absolutely lived up to the hype, and I don't think any other match was on this level. But every match ranged from competent to amazing. Everything was predictable, but definitely in a good way. They also talked about the weather a lot, which I found interesting. The only thing I wasn't a fan of was the, what I consider, excessive sponsorship around the ring and advertisements. It seemed more excessive than ever, and it makes it seem like a more corporate WWE than I would prefer. It was quite distracting at times. Yeah, what did you think about that, Brandon? Look, I'm fine with it. You know, I'm the person who is okay with putting sponsorship on jerseys, and I know that's in sports, and I know that's kind of sacred ground for a lot of sports, although they've started doing it in basketball, I think, a little more. What did you think of the advertising? Was it too much for you, or does it not really affect your enjoyment at all?
I thought, especially the Prime logo in the ring, I thought that was going to be a hindrance, and I actually didn't mind it at all. In fact, I barely noticed it through most of the show. I mean, I noticed when Cody kissed it because, you know, it obviously drew attention to it. But
so did I.
Aside from that, I really didn't think it was a hindrance at all. I mean, the stuff around the ring on the barriers didn't really seem like a big deal to me. I'm so used to it in sports now. I'm so conditioned to it that it just felt like it almost felt like it was just sort of par for the course. Like it almost made this feel like a more legitimate sporting event. You know what I mean? Just because sporting events just have this. So it felt like an update into the 21st century of sorts. I mean, if they hated the results and tomorrow they decided we're never doing this again, would I care or notice? No, not at all. But I went in being pretty pessimistic about it and wound up not caring much at all.
Right. I'm not banging the drum saying you must have sponsorship on every piece of gear or piece of, you know, available space, but I'm more saying, it doesn't really bother me. I understand it. Like if you're a company and you're wanting to make money and people are willing to advertise, you're going to find a space for them. So I get that from a, capitalist point of view. Anyway, I guess.
Honestly,
the funniest thing
to me was not during WrestleMania, but during Stand and Deliver this afternoon, the fact that two of the show's main sponsors were shows that reside on streaming services other than Peacock, and they had to advertise said services.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed the Netflix advertising, and I thought, you know, that's that makes sense that they're starting it this early, I guess. To John's question, he said, what letter grade would you give to this WrestleMania Night 1? I would say I would go B+. I thought it was good. I thought some of the matches that I thought were going to feel big did not feel as big, and I don't know, maybe that's the weight of my own expectations, but everything was good. I didn't see, there was nothing except maybe Gunther and Sami Zayn, there wasn't anything that really knocked my socks off. I mean, like, I thought Rhea Ripley versus Becky Lynch was pretty good, but that was one of those matches again that did not feel as epic. Maybe it was the illness of Becky Lynch or whatever. You know, Jey Uso versus Jimmy Uso, thought that was going to feel epic, just fell short of that for me. So I would say a solid B+. I thought it was overall strong, but I think it could have been a little stronger.
Yeah, I didn't want to give it the same grade you did, just for the sake of, you know.
Oh.
I don't want to ride your coattails, but
okay. We know the real grade you were going to give it, regardless of what you say now. So,
I mean, that's kind of where I'm at, though. Like, I really like the show. I thought it was a very fun night by what I've come to expect out of WrestleMania. I think that there have been much better wrestling shows this year alone. But in terms of being a spectacle, I just thought that it was really fun. It was a fun night where my expectations were at least met in almost every scenario, except for maybe the Jimmy and Jey match. And I would say that the Jimmy and Jey match is what prevents me from elevating it to an A-, because I'm with you in the sense that – so I think I'm higher on the main event than you are. So that felt like a big WrestleMania-level main event to me. Same goes for Gunther and Sami, which I thought, you know, even exceeded my expectations. Felt like a big, big crowning babyface moment for Sami on the WrestleMania stage. Rhea and Becky was very good. I enjoyed it very much, but it fell short of that fourth gear. So, you know, that knocks the show down overall a little bit for me. The ladder tag felt like, you know, a WrestleMania ladder match. Fun car crash, nothing extraordinary. Guys worked hard. The one that I thought would have more juice was Jimmy and Jey. And that video package that they did for that feud was just so good. And then to have the match just sort of feel underbaked, it left a lot to be desired. And I don't know if that is because the aura surrounding the Bloodline has sort of decreased in recent months, especially when it comes to Jimmy and Solo Sikoa. Or if it's because, you know, they didn't do a lot other than just the constant barrage of interference to really build this one up. I thought that the best part of this entire feud and the match that concluded it was the video package.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a problem. But, no, I do think we kind of grade WrestleMania differently than we grade other shows. And I think the way you kind of phrase it is, did this feel like a WrestleMania match? Did this feel like a WrestleMania spectacle? And I don't think, you know, fairly or unfairly, I don't think we grade other shows in that same way. So in that way, expectations can be a little bit higher, but it's more about the feel than I think any other show that you watch. And that's, you know, part of it is, you know, the wrestling. Part of it is the storylines and the build-up. So in that way, it's similar to a lot of other shows. But there is a certain feel, you know, you're used to getting from WrestleMania that you really weigh it against. John's second question is, well, we talked about that, the advertisements and sponsorships. Question number three, do you think Becky Rhea rematch will happen anytime soon, and when would you do it? I think it all depends. I mean, we've got potentially a WWE draft coming up soon that could separate Becky and Rhea. This is a clean win. There's no, I don't know what argument Becky Lynch would make to ask for a rematch. So I don't think they go to that right away.
Yeah, I don't think that they go to it right away either, just especially given where both women are in terms of crowd reaction. We talked about at the start of the show, just, you know, where Becky is at relative to Rhea and the idea that a turn for Rhea is probably coming sooner rather than later. The only reason to me that I think you would go back to it is if these two really feel like they have something else to prove because of Becky's sickness. It really seems, given how hard all three announcers sold the severity of Becky's strep throat this week, it really seems like they were trying to make excuses for the fact that they knew that they were not going to be able to reach that fourth gear. So the only way that I think it makes sense to go back to it is more of a meta thing where Becky and Rhea just really want to go knock it out of the park in a rematch where they feel like they could have done it if the circumstances were better tonight.
Back to John's email, he says, regarding Cody versus Roman and Bloodline rules tomorrow, I think it could be spectacular. The tag match was way better than I was expecting, given Rock's lack of recent in-ring work and Roman's matches recently not really reaching the highest level. I think this match tomorrow will be full of special appearances, Steve Austin and Cena in particular. There were no big turns in this tag match, but I think there may well be tomorrow night, either Rock, Roman, less likely, or perhaps Seth. Question number four. Though I prefer Cody winning, do you think there will be any big babyface heel turns in the main event tomorrow night? You know, the only one I could see really is The Rock. And so all eyes will be on him. I think if you'd asked me a month ago if I thought that could happen, I would say yes. But Rock has just gone so full on heel recently that I think if they were planning on a turn, they wouldn't have pushed so far in that direction. I'm thinking of the beatdown of Cody Rhodes on Raw where he leaves him bloodied. You know, that doesn't speak to me of a guy who's about to turn babyface. And if he does, I think it would take a lot more than an accidental spear by Roman Reigns to do that. So I would be surprised if we got, especially if you're having Cena and Austin make appearances, I think you don't want to muddy the waters and do a turn then as well. But what do you think about the potential? Maybe it's not Rock. Maybe it's Seth Rollins or somebody like that. Do you think there's a turn in the cards in the main event in some way?
Man, do I hope that they do not, for the sake of just swerving people, have Seth turn. Because, first of all, Seth has turned way too much. Second of all, this is one of the first times in his career where Seth's character feels like it has just true convictions. And of all the nonsensical things WWE has done over the years, explaining Seth's motivation for teaming with Cody despite them being enemies feels like one of the realest things that they have done in quite some time, and feels so true to the person that fans expect Seth Rollins to be both in and out of the ring. It just makes a lot of sense that Seth would do what he's doing and not double cross Cody. And so I really, really hope that they don't go in that direction. Man, I really hope they don't go in that direction.
Well, I also wonder how that would play. I also wonder how that would play out practically, because if Cody's going to win, how does Seth turn heel? I mean, does he turn heel after Cody wins? I mean, I don't think you want that to be your moment.
Right. And the alternative is he does it, and then Cody still wins in spite of it, which makes Seth look stupid. And I mean,
right,
Seth,
right.
Seth already has, you know, already has the potential to have a pretty rough night. So, I mean, I can see the motivation for it right now. You know, Seth loses to Drew. He's upset. You know,
he lost tonight.
I couldn't have. Huh?
He lost tonight as well. I mean, that could
loses
play
tonight,
into
loses,
his feelings.
Yep. And Cody ate the pin, so he's mad at Cody for taking the pin. He loses to Drew. He decides, you know, if Cody can't have his moment, if I can't have my moment, Cody can't have his. And I get it. There's no question there's going to be temptation for that, but I just hope they don't. I hope they subvert, you know, the typical wrestling swerve and just go in the other direction. And I think that, you know, now that we know for certain that it's a Bloodline Rules match, I think we're all sort of expecting the overbookedness. And I don't even say that negatively. I mean, it could be a ton of fun. But if we are going to get the Avengers-style babyface congregation, then I think any attempt to turn Seth would be overshadowed by that. And especially overshadowed by Cody eventually winning, if that is the plan and that's what happens. So I don't know. I mean, I think the most likely is The Rock, but I'm with you. I think if they knew that they had that in their back pocket and that's the direction that they were going, I don't think that you go as hard as you have in making him a heel. And that's why I said earlier, I would like, you know, if they're going to do The Rock and Roman Reigns, I think waiting quite a long while before that dissension comes about is your best option. So, yeah, I hope it's straight up. I mean, I hope the baby faces are the baby faces, the heels are the heels, and we don't see a turn. But, you know, they could also be swayed by the reaction Rock got tonight. I mean, there were boos for Cody, which I didn't expect. If anything, I expected people to cheer for The Rock and also cheer for Cody, which was by and large the reaction, but there were audible boos for Cody that we have never heard on this run.
Mm-hmm. Next question from John. He says, do you think there is any circumstance in which Roman Reigns could win and there not be backlash from fans worldwide, including on your show? I constantly hear fans say how there is no way Roman should win, and I generally agree, but I also am wondering if it's possible for him to win and WWE to not get backlash. I really struggle to think of a scenario unless... I mean, you could use the distraction of an impending Rock versus Cody Rhodes match, you know, if you do that. But I don't know how you would work that in to where a Cody loss would even be acceptable. I think it hurts Cody a lot to lose here in any way. Like, I don't know that there's a way you can have – you know, forget about the backlash to Roman Reigns. I don't know that there's a way you can have Cody lose here and not have him lose – something, and who knows, I could be wrong. I was wrong last year. I thought Cody losing last year was going to hurt, and it may have hurt in the short term, but you know, we're in the same place, and I don't think Cody is any less than right now as a character, as you know, getting reactions from the crowd, save for the boos tonight that you mentioned. I don't think he's less than for having lost at WrestleMania last year, so maybe they can't finagle a way to book him to lose, but I don't see a scenario that's palatable for fans, especially the way they set it up tonight, you know, with the going so heavy-handed about Cody fighting from behind tomorrow night and having no chance and things like that. You know, some may read that into them giving him an excuse to lose. But I think it's more trying to overcome the odds. So is there any way that you can imagine a Cody Rhodes loss, a Roman Reigns win tomorrow night, being acceptable to the WWE fan base writ large?
Nope.
Pretty simple.
the issue is that I don't necessarily think it hurts Cody Rhodes. And that's because I think it hurts the company as a whole, because it will intentionally or not intentionally, it will make the company the main character again, which is something that they dealt with for years on end with poor booking and decisions that flew in the face of everything that the crowd wanted. Roman Reigns won't be the heel if he beats Cody Rhodes. The Rock won't be the heel if he gets involved and helps Roman beat Cody. The heel will be the company. And they've done such a good job for a very long time at subverting that and walking the line, because, man, did they come close last year when Roman beat Cody. But they did enough to subvert that, to push, you know, push far enough away from it. And they got what they wanted. I mean, they got an extra year of build, and I think in hindsight it was the right call. But to do it again, that will put it over the edge. You can't test people's patience and ask them for a second year in a row and humiliate Cody in that way. I think it would be an all-out rejection, an all-out backlash, and it would be, you know, against the company, not against the wrestlers. And the last thing that they need right now on this run, the way that they have been going, is to make the company a character again.
And finally, John wants to know, what are your thoughts on what will be the match of the night tomorrow night? Keep up the great work. Thanks, John. You know, looking at the card, I think certainly Reigns, Cody, it's going to be the spectacle match, but it could be a good spectacle. You've got Drew and Seth, and I think Bayley versus Io Sky, they would be my top contenders for match of the night. I'm not sure if there's another one that could really, the triple threat with Logan Paul, Kevin Owens, Randy Orton. I'm not hot on that one. So those three would be probably the top three I would think of. Rollins, McIntyre, I think if I had to choose one of those three, would be the one I would go with, because Rhodes versus Reigns could be really good, but it could also be the kind of spectacle that's just too much. And so I think Rollins versus McIntyre is the safer choice for match of the night tomorrow. What's your pick or prediction for what you think has the best chance of being match of the night?
It depends on how you look at it. I think if you want to talk about WrestleMania spectacle, big deal, it's going to be the main event. I mean, you know, they're going to pull out all the stops. They're going to do God knows what to turn it into a major level. So a major level main event. So if that's your thing, if you are really into the WrestleMania WWE style main event, then I think it's an easy call to say it's going to be Rhodes and Reigns. But just in terms of pure wrestling, I think it's the other two, the ones you mentioned, Io and Bayley and Seth and Drew. I'll take Io and Bayley just to be different, and also because I think that they're going to be really, really motivated to go out there and have a really, really great match. I think that it's going to be cool to see Bayley back in a babyface role with the crowd. I would expect to be firmly behind her. Io is a fantastic wrestler who is going to get a chance to, you know, prove her worth on the big stage. I think that they could have a really great match.
Isn't much about Mania Night 1 that we haven't talked about. Haven't talked a lot about the tag team ladder match. Haven't really touched on Rey and Andrade defeating Dominic and Santos Escobar, which I thought for a little while was my favorite match of the night. Anything about those two matches that you want to touch on?
About the involvement of Jason Kelce and Lane Johnson, went off a little bit differently than I would have expected. I thought that it was kind of short-sighted of them to book them to keep the masks on for so long. The crowd, given that, you know, a lot of them are so far away from the ring, I don't think that everybody really knew who it was. You could kind of surmise it was Kelce, you know, just based on the body type and the fact that they had gone so heavy-handed in trying to coax him to come to WrestleMania. But Lane Johnson, you know, just sort of when he's under cover of a mask is not exactly an easy profile to pick out, other than being, you know, tall, big guy. So I thought that it was a bit of a mistake to not have them pull the masks a little bit sooner. And the reaction to them was subdued. And I think that's largely because, you know, you're playing to a Philadelphia crowd, but the WrestleMania crowd is not necessarily largely comprised of locals. I mean, this is an event
right.
that WWE is very proud to tout, brings people from all over the world. So,
yep.
you know, Jason Kelce and Lane Johnson don't mean to the WrestleMania crowd what a bunch of people at an Eagles game would have them mean to them. So it was kind of an awkward reveal, but it was a cool moment on screen, and it was a fine finish for what that match was.
Yeah. I agree. I thought the same thing, and in fact, I tweeted it out. You know, you can follow me at Greg M. Parks. That it just didn't, you know, they do these local things at WrestleMania, and most of the people in the crowd aren't locals, so I don't really know what effect that's mm-hmm. going to have. But whatever. Going back to Stand and Deliver, we had just real quick to run down that show. Joe Gacy beat Sean Spears in a pre-show match. Baron Corbin and Braun Breaker retained the tag titles over Axiom and Nathan Frazier. Obafemi defeated Dijak and Josh Briggs to retain the North American title. Thea Hale, Kalani Jordan, and Fallon Henley defeated JC Jane, Kiana James, and Izzy Dame. Roxanne Perez won the women's title over Lyra Valkyria. Ilya Dragunov retained over Tony D'Angelo the NXT championship, and Trick Williams defeated Carmelo Hayes. Before we go here, anything stand out to you from that show? What did you think of the show overall?
I thought it was a fine show. Really, really liked the first two matches. I thought that the Baron Corbin was really impressive. I mean, I've seen some of his work with Braun Breaker. Like I said, not a regular watcher of NXT anymore, so I haven't seen his whole run down there. But he was very good, and Braun was, as usual, very impressive. The way he hits the ropes is incredible. That moment where he leaped up onto the top rope and flexed just with incredible balance. Just a bunch of highlights in that one. I thought it was a really fun opener. And then the triple threat match with the three big men, a lot of fun too. I mean, some of the usual sort of knocks that you can give to WWE triple threat matches, but overall a really strong, strong match. And the show was fine. I mean, it was a hot crowd. They were really invested, looked great. And, you know, Shawn Michaels has certainly got his supporters for his style of booking. It's not a show that made me hyped to tune into NXT on Tuesday, but one that, you know, I thought was strong enough for me to consider carving out time for future takeover events. I will say I've commented on this before, and watching the whole show today made it even more obvious to me. I love Booker T. I really appreciate everything he's done for the business. I really enjoyed, you know, his run as King Booker and all the things that he's done in the ring. But I would be hard pressed to find somebody who I would like to listen to less on commentary. I mean, I can barely make it through. Yeah,
it really is.
And
part of me is wondering if it's like if it's like a rib on someone, like you know, just him being on commentary every week.
Anyone watching?
Maybe. I just think he brings zero to the table as a commentator.
He detracts. I mean, he actively harms the product in the way that he delivers lines, the things that he interjects. Most of his contributions to the table is just like incoherent noises.
Yeah, I mean, there is, I don't know, maybe there's a portion of fans who enjoy that, like who enjoy that the clownish nature of what he does on commentary. And I'll admit there are times where I laugh at the things he says. And, you know, his bickering with Vic and, you know, that kind of thing. But it's laughter, but it's just at the absurdity of it. It's not helpful, I don't think, to getting the product over or getting the wrestlers over. I don't think it's any of that. So I don't know. It's strange that they have him on commentary every week. I don't get it. But yeah, I thought Stand and Deliver, it was fine. It was, I think, nothing really surprising in terms of the match quality. I thought that the North American title match was really good. I thought the six-woman tag was about what you would expect for where many of these women are in their careers in terms of the in-ring. I thought Roxanne Perez and Lyra Valkyria was really good. I thought Valkyria had a title reign that bested my expectations, so I thought that was really nice. D'Angelo just didn't feel like an NXT title challenger, especially one for the supposed biggest show of the year on WrestleMania weekend. But, you know, Trick Mello was – I thought Trick Mello, it was smart to go on last, especially with Trick Williams winning. And it felt bigger. It felt bigger than the NXT title match at this point. So that made a lot of sense to me. But, yeah, that's it. And that's it for tonight. We're just getting to be 1 a.m. here on the East Coast. So, Brandon, you're going to be back with me here tomorrow night after WrestleMania Night 2. So really excited about that. Two nights in a row of Wrestling Night in America. I'll be tweeting or Xing along with, I don't even know what the verb is anymore, of the show tomorrow night, WrestleMania Night 2 at Greg M. Parks. I know, Brandon, you're going to have coverage of the show on PWTorch.com. So appreciate you hopping on, staying up late tonight, and we'll do it again tomorrow. Thanks, Brandon.
Sounds good.
And thanks, everybody, for listening and calling in and emailing. Don't forget, you know, if you're going to watch WrestleMania Night 2, join us again. Call in. Give us your thoughts on the show. Email us. Give us your thoughts on the show that way. So I hope you do that. This is Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. Until tomorrow night, this has been Wrestling Night in America.